and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today, we're tackling kale.
Yes. And a disclaimer right at the front, kale is one of my favorite foods. And I eat it every week, at least.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I eat it frequently. I don't make a point of eating it every week, but it's certainly some kind of tough leafy green vegetable. Collards are also popular in my house.
Yeah.
Turnip greens. I love turnip greens and mustard greens. Which are all related.
They are. Oh, and a quick note, too. There is food stuff, for those of you who don't know. We used to have, like, an earlier version where we were trying to get this going. And we had a video series. And there is a food stuff video starring Kristen Conger of Unladylike now and Ben Bolin, co-worker.
Mm-hmm. Produced by Annie.
Produced by Annie, yeah. And it has a cameo by Barbie and Dr. Kale.
Oh,
anyway,
Dr.
it was about kale,
kale
and it was mm-hmm. excellent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Please do. That's not just Annie saying it because she, like, worked on it. It was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Kristen and Ben were doing really good work, and Annie as
yeah.
well. So go check that out. We'll see if we can post it on Facebook.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. And also, a fun note about it is I went through this whole thing. For a while, I was producing video. That was my job. And mm-hmm. I was determined that every video have captions, subtitles.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And to do that on YouTube, you play the video and then you type it in and it'll pause
wow.
while you're typing, which is fine, but it's obviously very
time-consuming. Sure.
Yeah. But there is a feature for YouTube to do it automatically. So I tested it on the kale video.
Uh-huh.
And it translated kale as cocaine.
Oh, my goodness.
So the whole video.
That is certainly a different episode.
Was like, I love cocaine. I've got to get more cocaine.
I eat cocaine at least once a week.
Yes. Like the beginning of the video has been showing up with the backpack. And he's like, I bought the cocaine. It's really good. I mean, I thought it was hilarious.
Wow.
But clearly, I could not trust YouTube's
auto
transcribe
sure.
service.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway.
Yeah. So if you do check out the video, then keep that in mind.
Yes. Keep that in mind. But let's tackle our first question we always tackle. What is it?
Kale?
Yes. What is kale?
It's a leafy green. It's a member of the Brassica oleracea species, whose cultivars include cabbages and broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts. Kale is a whole group of cultivars called acephala, of which collard greens are also a member. But culturally speaking, we're going to have to do a whole other episode on collards.
Yes.
Or like food culturally, not horticulturally.
Yes.
Anyway, kale leaves are commonly deep green or purple or a little bit of both and sort of ruffled or dimpled. And they grow loose off of kale's stalks rather than like in a head like many cabbages tend
yeah.
to do.
Mm-hmm.
Botanists think that kales are closer to Brassica's wild cabbage roots than other cultivars because of this, and they're so easy to garden. Like, they don't need to be heavily developed as some of these other things have had done to them
yeah,
in
and,
the past.
Yes, and actually that is kind of important to kale's whole history, which
yeah.
we will be talking about.
Oh, yeah. In general, if you have not had kale, or if you need a reminder perhaps—
mm-hmm.
The flavor profile of kale is sort of green, grassy, peppery, bittersweet, pungent.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to be sturdier and less tender than lettuces and even many cabbages. But there are so many kinds of kale.
Yes.
And depending on how you cook the different kinds, it can be crisp, sort of chewy, sort of tender, or even sort of silky, with varying ratios of bitter to sweet involved.
Yeah. I have a friend and She likes to fight me about my love of kale.
Uh-huh. Okay.
She's convinced I'm just on some kind of trend and that I'm not seeing things clearly.
Oh, goodness.
But she's always, one of her arguments is always, you could just eat romaine.
It's totally different.
I know. I can't, we are not connecting in this argument.
No.
Like, it's just missing
That's,
each other.
Yeah.
She always says it every time.
Okay, you can't cook romaine lettuce at all.
No, they taste completely different.
They do, okay.
I feel like I'm having the emotion is rising as I'm thinking about it. When it comes to variety, kale does have you covered with over 50 types.
So, like, yeah, there's a kale for that.
Mm-hmm.
You've got classic curly kale, great for cooking or even raw if you rub it down with some salt and citrus juice. Dinosaur kale, which is more tender and good for pretty much everything. Red Russian, which is sweet and tender and good for salads. Siberian, which is perfect for a sauté. In addition to purples and greens, kale comes in reds, whites, and pinks. There are varieties used more for ornamentation than for food, but which are still edible, like Salad Savoy, which grows these rosettes of pink or white leaves, and Red Boar, which goes stunningly violet in cool weather. Like you're turning violet, violet, violet. It's the color.
Jinx. Is that how that works? I don't remember anymore.
I'm not sure.
Dinosaur kale is my favorite kale, by the way. But I haven't tried a lot of these, so there's a whole kale world open
I
to me.
I know, yeah. I do love a dinosaur kale as well, partially because it's called dinosaur kale.
I know, yeah.
And it just makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, y'all, I have a huge problem with the term superfood.
Yeah.
Usually it's just marketing some kind of like woo-involved false promise that this one weird food will fix all your problems.
Yeah.
And that's not how food works.
Nope.
It's not how your body works.
Mm-mm.
However, it is true. Kale's pretty good for you.
Yep.
It's nutrient dense. One cup contains more than your recommended daily values of vitamins C, A, and K, plus a whole bunch of others and a lot of minerals like calcium and iron. It carries a little bit of oils that are the good fats, omega-3s, and about 2 to 3 grams of protein. Its carbs are complex and fibery. It won't spike your blood sugar. So if you're trying to fill yourself up without resorting to starches and for cheap, kale is great, especially for folks who don't eat meat. Please do note that this all depends on how you're cooking your kale.
Yes.
Like really oil-heavy things like kale chips, although delicious, do carry a heavy caloric load from all that fat and should still be considered treats. I mean, like, yes, they're better than French fries, but they're not better than steaming or braising or sautéing your kale.
Right.
And as always, friends, beware of claims that a food will cure cancer or prevent heart disease or anything huge like that, because our bodies are complicated.
Yeah.
And preliminary studies have indicated that eating kale could help lower your cholesterol and your risk for cataracts and some cancers, but it can also interfere with blood thinning medications and cause clots. So don't treat it like a medicine without supervision from a doctor. You know, if you like it, incorporate it into your overall diet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But don't freak out about it.
No.
Speaking of freakouts.
Yes, yes.
As of 2016, retail sales of kale in the United States were worth more than $165 million and accounted for 0.3% of all produce sales, which sounds small, but is...
It's pretty substantial.
It's substantial for a single item, yes.
It is. And we've got to talk about peak kale.
Oh, goodness. Yes, we do.
Yes. Kale exploded with popularity in the 2000s. It went from the sad, wilted garnish to the it vegetable.
Oh, yeah.
From 2008 to 2013, restaurant menus with some sort of kale item on them increased by 400%.
What?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Bon Appetit magazine named 2012 the year of kale.
Ugh.
In 2013, kale gets its own National Kale Day annually on October 2nd. It kind of became this symbol of hipsters, of a healthy and eco-friendly living. There is a legal battle ongoing with the creator of those Eat More Kale shirts and Chick-fil-A.
Oh, eat more chicken, eat more kale.
Yep.
I see you.
Mm-hmm. 2013/2014 was the height of peak kale, fueled in part by a shortage in New York City due to a blizzard.
Oh.
Yeah, and this and a lot of things remind me of cauliflower in our cauliflower episode. Cauliflower also experienced a huge bump when there was a shortage in New York City specifically, so must be a thing.
Yeah.
With all of this trending and rise of popularity has come a sea of kale products, some strangers than others, and some non-food ones.
Okay.
Kale chips, kale salads, kale smoothies, kale beauty products, gold-dipped kale necklaces.
What?
Kale cocktails, kale brownies, kale dips for your kale chips.
Oh, my goodness.
Kale ice cream, kale soda, kale-themed restaurants, shirts with kale puns, kale everywhere.
The trend raised the demand for kale, And therefore, the price of kale has risen. It rose, for example, 25% between 2011 and 2014. And since kale is fairly inexpensive to start with, that's really only a 22 cents per bunch increase, 88 cents to $1.10. But it's certainly enough to make kale less accessible to the people who were using it for sustenance before the trend happened, especially low-income families. And occasional local shortages have doubled prices from time to time, as Annie was saying about New York, stuff like that.
Yep.
And this kind of falls in line with my problem of labeling things superfoods and has raised criticism also from people who are not me.
Yes.
And, oh, man, I want to do a whole episode on food trends and superfoods and et cetera.
Yeah.
I'm giving us more homework now. It's official.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. I will say, not to sound too hipster about it, I was ahead of the trend. I see something in the grocery store, and I go to very basic grocery stores. I'm not going anywhere exciting. if I see something I have never eaten before, I get it.
And try to figure out how to make
yeah,
it. Totally.
Which
yeah.
is always fun, because usually when I check out, they don't know what it is either.
Yeah.
And that's how I discovered kale, is I remember seeing it in store and thinking,
What?
We never had that when I was growing up. And the rest is history. the kale explosion, this explosion of kale popularity, was fairly unique to the U.S. Other countries were on the kale train long before us. In Germany, there's a celebration centered entirely around eating cooked kale. I love that. That's so great.
Yeah, Germany, get it.
In Scotland, kale has long been a staple, an important enough one that in the local dialect, the word kale translates to food. And if you are off your kale, you might be sick. Which brings us to the question I have always wondered personally. Why was kale virtually non-existent in the U.S. until the 2000s? At least I never ran across it before then.
I don't think I did either.
Yes. Well, we have the answer and more. But first, a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. Okay, because kale is so easy to grow and a true vegetable survivor hanging on through harsh conditions and cold temperatures, it was probably one of the first vegetables humans cultivated. Yes, probably, because we don't know for sure.
Yeah.
This hardiness, like we alluded to earlier, would later lead to a massive kale slump. But more on this later in the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Asia Minor is most likely where kale got its start.
When?
Good question! We know it arrived in Europe thanks to groups of Celtic wanderers by 600 BCE. The history suffers from what we here at Foodstuff call cauliflower syndrome.
Ah.
No, we don't. But we should! That is to say, the word kale comes from the Scottish word coles or collis, which the Greeks and Romans used to refer to all the cabbage-like plants, such as cauliflower, collards, and cabbage. Upping the confusion, ancient Roman manuscripts might have used the word brassica to mean all of those things, too. Records indicate that the ancient Greeks would boil down kale and other leafy vegetables to eat as a way to cure drunkenness.
It'll give you some nutrients.
Yeah. Yeah. Depends on how drunk you are, I suppose. But yes.
Totally.
Dioscorides wrote in the first century that kale was excellent for the bowels. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Romans brought it to France and Britain, if it wasn't there already, under the same colewort or col umbrella as cauliflower was under, if you remember from our cauliflower episode. Kale was common throughout Europe and Asia by the Middle Ages, and all kinds of varieties of it, too. The Middle Ages was when the English or Scottish started using the word kale to mean dinner. It was that frequent at European meals.
Wow.
In Asia, kale was less popular when compared to other vegetables in the cabbage family, but it was eaten there. The colonists brought kale with them to North America in the 16th century, but they weren't as excited about it as their European brethren. The first time kale was mentioned in writing was in 1669 in North America, though they were almost certainly around before then.
Mm-hmm.
Around the same time, Russian traders brought Russian kale to Canada, where it spread into the U.S.
Thomas Jefferson grew the Italian dinosaur kale, also called Tuscan or lacinato kale, in his garden in Monticello.
Mm. Kale hummed along until World War II, when it was included in the UK's Dig for Victory campaign.
Ah, Dig for Victory.
Yeah. This was a campaign by the UK government to encourage gardeners to grow certain things. Relevant to this episode, kale. Because of that hardiness we mentioned, kale was often grown and eaten during tough times, whether on national levels or on a personal level for those struggling with poverty. And this meant that after World War II, folks were pretty tired of kale. And on top of that, it had an association with poor people. Not just in the U.S. either. In European countries, it was associated with the hunger and deprivation of World War II, and it never really fully recovered.
Yeah, in France today, this date, it's still just like, why would you eat that?
Yeah, why are Americans so excited about kale?
Yeah.
It's kind of an eye roll situation. Yeah, not true in the U.S. It took some time, though. It was relegated to garnish for a long time. You might be surprised how long. The LA Times published a poem sent in by a reader about kale in 1996. It was called In Praise of Kale, and the author perhaps foresaw the coming meteoric rise of the vegetable, although it would take more than a decade and a lot of celebrity juice.
Juice, is that a pun for juicing?
Yeah.
Juicing pun. Perfect.
Yes, thank you. According to a Blue Apron blog, when kale appeared in some CSA boxes in 2007, which is basically when you get boxes of, like, locally grown vegetable produce, and it can include meat and eggs and stuff, but, you know.
Yeah.
I was part of one for a while, and I loved it. People didn't know what the kale was in these boxes was or what the kale was. I like that.
What the kale?
Yeah. Or what to do with it. That people were posting online. What is this thing? How do I cook it?
Huh.
The following year, Whole Living gave kale that elusive title of superfood. In 2009, Martha Stewart published a kale slaw recipe. The Vegetarian Times published a recipe for something very similar to kale chips in 2010. And that same year, the New York Times published a recipe for a kale salad. And this brings us to the big one.
Yeah?
Kale's big break.
Ah.
In 2011, Gwyneth Paltrow made kale chips on Ellen.
Ah.
And history was made.
The first thing is the kale chips, which I just wanted to show you. That it takes it's so quick.
I love kale chips.
And kids, they turn into like potato chips, but they're kale, and your kids will eat them, and you will be so psyched because
it's very silly.
It is.
I mean,
quite silly.
Delicious.
Oh yeah.
Useful. Inexpensive.
Yep.
Silly.
Silly. Quite silly.
The trend is silly, not kale. And kale is relatively neutral.
We weren't insulting you, kale, in case.
Yeah, not today, anyway.
No.
And we have a few science notes for you, but first we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. So, there is some science behind getting the most out of kale in your cooking.
Ah.
It's one of those vegetables that will undergo some chemistry in your mouth if you let it. Part of kale's characteristic bittersweet and pungent flavor comes from these sulfur compounds called isothiocyanates that do not exist in kale leaves when they're just hanging out minding their own kale business. It's formed when you chop, chew, or massage kale. And yes, kale massaging is a part of many recipes. It's that rubbing with salt and citrus juice thing.
That's the thing I often don't do, but
yeah. So when you chop or chew or massage, you disrupt the structure of kale's cell walls and let these two disparate compounds form up into those isothiocyanates, the two compounds being an enzyme and some sulfuric compounds.
Mm-hmm.
If you blanch kale leaves whole, or even just soak them in hot water, you will deactivate some of that enzyme that's involved, so less of the isothiocyanates will form, and your kale will be less bitter.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not looking for that bitter kick, then do that blanching or that hot water soak. But But if you like it, then don't.
Do as you will.
Do as you will. Yeah. Shall be the whole of the kale law. And if you're dealing with a type of kale that calls for being massaged in order to make it tender enough to eat raw, but you still want it to be on the mild or sweet end instead of bitter, just rinse it after you chop it.
Yeah, it's simple as that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and hey, if you're wondering why kale and other leafy greens shrink so much when you cook them or wilt when you leave them out on the counter, that's because of a loss of water in the plant's cells. When leafy vegetables are growing or kept in water or kept cool enough, water will fill the plant cells and the pressure inside will keep each cell taut. But when you cook greens, the cell walls break and the moisture escapes, and on the counter, it will eventually evaporate out.
No!
That's why if you're looking for a really crisp vegetable, you can stick it in like a vase of water as you would cut flowers before you serve it. Stick it in the fridge in a vase of water. Yeah, it'll crisp right up.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Little kale vase.
Oh, and shout out to the excellent book Cook's Science from the folks at Cook's Illustrated for some of those science notes. They do really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I like them.
I wish I had rewatched the kale video we made before doing this, because I remember there's a note in there about how if you cook kale with fat, it helps your body absorb
the
nutrients better. And so Kristen and Ben's recommendation was to cook it with bacon.
Oh, clearly. I mean, that's how we cook. That's how we cook kale in my house. We like saute some bacon and then use some of the bacon fat to just put the kale right on top of. Yeah. Cook it down.
My goodness, I'm hungry. Oh, my goodness.
Add some mushrooms in there, too.
Oh, Lauren,
it's so delicious.
You've got to stop, Lauren. Okay, I think we need to end this episode now.
go make some kale?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which brings us to listener mail.
I love this improv thing that we do for
I
every
know.
Okay, it can go so many ways.
It really can. There's a lot of body language involved.
Yeah.
Like, what's gonna happen? Who knows? How many ways can we say listener mail?
Oh,
we will
goodness.
Discover.
Many.
Yes. Samantha wrote, I was listening to your delivery podcast the other day, grinning the whole way through it, as I thought of the most unusual delivery order I've ever placed.
Ooh.
Picture it. Louisville, Kentucky, 3 days before the Derby. My club rides our horses in the parade every year, and we stay out at the fairgrounds in downtown Louisville, since not one of us is from the city proper. It had been a long day of riding and washing and grooming horses, and of course, visiting distilleries on the Bourbon Trail.
Uh-huh.
So there's between 15 and 20 women, ranging from teenage to retired, starving. Oh. And we aren't inflicting ourselves on any poor wait staff. So what are hungry horsewomen to do? Pizza!
Of course. Yeah.
We ordered a lot of pizza. About half a pie per person.
Oh, goodness.
And paid over the phone. We thought we gave good directions to the barns, but alas, we were wrong. I was up on my sturdy gelding and went in search of the wayward Little Caesar's driver. I found him, and while giving instructions on where to go, my overly friendly lummox of a horse stuck his entire sizable head into the driver's window in his lap. Oak was just looking for treats and didn't do anything malicious, but man, he certainly shook the driver up. I got Oak's head back out, helped carry the pizza, and tipped the driver very, very well. Mr. Driver, wherever you are, I am still so sorry he scared you. That's a great story.
That is. I'm a little bit freaked out by horses.
Mm.
And I just because most of their sense of humor seems to involve humans getting mildly injured.
So, well, you could argue humans.
Oh, well, that's
humorous.
But horses are much bigger than we are.
This is true.
I would have been very startled if that was me. But that is a wonderful story.
Yes. And at the very least, he got a good tip and a good story out of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Diana wrote, the history of pepper trading reminded me of a Hans Christian Andersen story I read in my childhood called The Old Bachelor's Nightcap. The story talked about the German-owned beer and spice shops in Copenhagen during, or before, Andersen's time. These shops were owned by German merchants who sent their clerks to Denmark to manage the shops. As pepper was the most predominant spice being sold in those shops, these clerks came to be known as Pepperspend, or pepper sellers. Before leaving Germany, they had to sign a contract which prohibited them to marry in Denmark. Eventually, the word Pepperspend became synonymous with bachelor, and it still has this meaning today. I'm not Danish, and I have no idea if this is historically correct or how widely this word is used. All the knowledge I have are from Hans Christian Andersen and Google. Still, I find it fascinating, even if it's just a story. By the way, The Old Bachelor's Nightcap is a deeply tragic and hauntingly beautiful story, and I highly recommend it. It had left such a deep impression in me that to this day, I remember the tidbit about Pepperspend.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up. I have the book of fairy tales by Hans Christian Andersen, and it's beautiful and huge, and I haven't read all of them, so I wonder if it's in there.
Yeah, I have a few compendiums of his work, but he wrote a lot. There's a bunch.
Yes.
I have not gotten through all of them.
Yes.
But now that I know.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested to read that.
Oh, and that's got to be in the public works by now.
Oh, yeah,
We could do a little foodstuff story hour.
Oh, we could.
Oh,
I got really excited by that idea.
Yeah. If you, and Dylan is nodding, so I think we're on.
Yeah.
If you guys know of any other stories, like especially that are in the public domain at this point.
Always helpful.
Write in and let us know.
Yeah. We'll do a little dramatic foodstuff reading.
Yes.
Yes. So if you have anything like that or anything else you'd like to send us, you can do so. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Instagram @foodstuff and on Twitter and Facebook @foodstuffhsw. I just wigged myself out a little bit by switching those two things around. I usually do them in the opposite order. We hope to hear from you. Thank you so much to the aforementioned Dylan Fagan. Yes, he's terrific. He's our producer.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.